I always say to barbers as well, you know, like, they'll open up, they might get a loan for 25, 30 grand. And they'll spend 25, 30 grand on furniture. And they open up and they've got no marketing plan. You know, keep 10 grand back for advertisement, marketing, social media campaigns. We produce excellent products. Yeah. We're the biggest clipper corporation in the world. I think we are the barber's choice. Sometimes we make things too good. It lasts too long. Is the 20 weeks prior to the exhibition coming, the hard graft, the sales, the marketing, the ideas, the concept, selecting the team, training the team that you look at, it's creme de la creme. And they're getting stronger and stronger. The last 10 years, barbering's grown so much. And it's been the biggest growth in this hair and beauty industry, yep. I think, barbering. I just think the last year and a half, 2 years, it stood still a little bit. And I'm not seeing as much investment into education as what they used to be. Bear in mind, the academy upstairs, 80% of our courses are hairdressers. Barbers kind of like...
They know it already.
I always have a saying, you can always tell a barber, you just can't tell them much.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony LeBand. And we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there. I'm Anthony LeBand and welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here at Wile UK headquarters with Simon. Hi, Simon. Simon Shaw, obviously. Last time we spoke, you'd just taken on kind of European artistic director. And so I think we should probably start with how that's going for you.
Yeah, I think last year was a really busy year. And I've always been the UK, then in working in Europe and then globally. But in December last year, 2024, became director of education for EMEA, which is UK, Europe, South Africa, Middle East. So 62 countries.
Yeah.
And my job has changed a little bit. It's not just the artistic side, it's the day-to-day running of education across that region. And like you've seen today, there's a lot of staff, a lot of people, and it's training at all different levels, not just the hairdressing and barbering, but it's the presentation skills, education for them to educate the consumer side of it. So look, multitasking with everything, but yes, it's gone well so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the first time I've had a proper mooch around, and I've managed to get around a fraction of the footprint here. And you've got 20, 30 European educators here today?
I think we had 28 is in. And then we've got like four assistants here. So I've got Chiara from Italy, Heike from Germany, Desiree from the Netherlands, and Valentine from France, who marketing and head of education in those areas. They've come to help me. So we're about 34 staff on premises at the minute, yeah. Wow. And we had the UK guys in 2 weeks ago, so we had 18, 19 of them in. So yeah, it's a big team.
Yeah. But, and you know, as I said to you before, you know, Wile is probably present in more barbershops across, well, not just the UK, Europe, it's the world, is more present than any other barbering tool, I would have thought. That's not just because it's good kit, surely.
Well, I think, well, one, yeah, we produce excellent products. Yeah. We're the biggest clipper corporation in the world and probably the oldest now. We're into 107 years. I think we make excellent products. It's nice for you to say that. I think we are the barber's choice. Whenever I'm on vacation anywhere in the world and people say, who do you work for, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I work for Wall, and they go, wow, oh yeah, I've got those clippers. I've had them 20 years. Sometimes we make things too good. It lasts too long. But I think you've just hit a point is that what we have built at exhibitions, at shows, and we've built communities. We've built we've built like some really nice education, and we built family.
I mean, that's the bit wandering around here, so much of everything, even, you know, obviously normally we all see the company as the kind of front face, you know, Cal, Dean, the boys up on stage, you know, knocking out a great show at a trade fair, doing some great stuff. But as you wander around, as you say, you've got huge amounts of warehouse staff here, marketing, you know, every aspect of the company. And you get the feel that the family extends past the bunch of boys that are coming on tour with you guys.
Absolutely. And everything, whenever we do an exhibition and we've had a great weekend and it's been full of people watching us and full of praise. And when I do my team talks to everybody, I always mention right from the beginning, when we decide to do a show, then it's hand to marketing to come up with concepts and design the stand and design the backdrops to then going down to warehouse where they get all the pallets of stock ready and make sure they're delivered to the exhibition. Our salespeople will deal with the partner. It's not just
we're just look pretty while everyone else is making sure the heavy lifting's done. We're just the arrow.
It's the bow that's the main thing. And I think while ever we do that, and I keep the team humbled by that as well, is that you can't do this without them. And obviously, you know, the talent that they haven't, the team don't get the success without the arrow hitting direct to the heart. Yeah. And we tend to do it to the heart. And this is, you know, for us, look, I always say to everybody, if you've got kids and they go to local football, think about this. They train sometimes for once a week, 1 hour. Do you think they're going to play for Man United? Do you think they're going to play for Man City? Do you think they're going to play for Chelsea? Do you think in your heads, if you take your kids training for 1 hour a week, they're going to make it? Guys, you're going to have to do 20, 30 hours a week training to get even into an academy. And then it's one in 2,000 that make it. Yeah. So we have to put a lot of work in at Wall. And you've seen behind the scenes today, just some of the stuff that you do. And that is not like about the exhibitions, the end bit.
Yeah.
Is the 20 weeks prior to the exhibition coming, the hard graft, the sales, the marketing, the ideas, the concept, dealing with the stand directors, dealing with the sound and light people, selecting the team, training the team, what we're wearing, blah, it's just the end bit.
One of the big things that we talk time and time again in the industry is about recruitment, and you can't get staff and and apprentices. And we've had that conversation a lot. But from you, from Wael's point of view, it seems like the kind of focus is much more on that retaining staff, keeping people not just happy, but involved in the company. You know, is that something that really is the core heart of it?
I think it is. I mean, I think from my point of view, I'm always wanting to reinvent myself and keep fresh. I always want to recruit the very best people. I always want to recruit the very best. I think because it keeps me on my toes. We don't take any half. You know, we always sign the best. The team that you look at, it's creme de la creme, and they're getting stronger and stronger. So I think from my point of view, yes, it is about retention, because retention is a hardest trick in the world. It's easy to deselect a person. The hardest thing in the world is to select a person.
Sure.
That's a craft, is when you select the right people and then you return the services. And you can only do that by reinvesting back into them, looking after them. You know,
you're now doing that over a wider footprint. Do the same principles work as you go through Europe, the Emirates?
Well, it's so temperamental, you know.
We're
a lot easier. I have to say, so, you know, sometimes I've had decisions in Spain and France and the Netherlands where I've had to make a couple of decisions to say, you know, you're not going to be doing this exhibition. And these are the reasons why. And by the time I've got back to my hotel, they've handed the notice in, and then I have to talk them back round. And then the day after, they rescind their resignation because very temperamental in Europe. But they're getting
much more passionate.
Yeah, they get into my way of thinking, and sometimes, you know, there's a reason why you're not selected, or there's a reason why you're selected. And sometimes, you know, for me, it's about that person needs a chance, and I can only ever see their quality if I give them a chance. So you need to test them sometimes.
But how do you choose, or how do these people make it onto the Wael team? How much knowledge and time do you spend in Spain, Italy, South Africa to choose the right people that will fit well with the team?
Well, I think you rely on your local lead educators and your local head of educations in our areas. So like I said, I've got some great people with me today. And they've always been good at recruiting. And then I think for me, we have a big, I have a big graft up in my office, which is every presenter that's associated with the brand in my region. And on that, it'll have the full name, their Instagram or their social angles. I'll know how many followers they've got, how much engagement they get, how many followers, how many likes, what I rate them on stage, what I rate them on education, how much education they've done for us. So you can take a snap look and say, right, we need somebody for Dubai. They've requested somebody with blonde hair and blue eyes. Let's have a look. He's got 70,000 followers. It's kind of an easy one to... Then we engage with the presenter. So look, would you like to go to Dubai for a week and do these shows?
Do you feel the work and what's going on in these other countries is very different than what's going on in the UK?
I told everybody, the team that I've selected from the UK to help me with the education here, you need to be on your AAA game, because the French, the Spanish, the French, some of the best barbers wow. I've ever seen. Guam, Joan, Ben, and Philippe that are here from France. Mate, their cutting is a different level. So we are very good in this country, but you need
we
to keep...
We can't sit on our laurels with
absolutely it. Absolutely not. Any of the French team are still... Obviously, it's a big team. It's a EMEA team. But any of the French guys could walk straight into the UK team, and that's a massive statement. That massive statement. Because I've got some big hitters in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the French guys can cut hair so well.
And what have you found most surprising the more you work in Europe? Have you found anything that you weren't expecting?
Well, the smoke a lot more smoke breaks. not really. I think when
have
you
they
got...
adapted to you quite well, or have you found that you've had to adapt a bit for the different countries?
I think, you know, if you'd have asked me that question 10 years ago, I'd have said, no, they're adapting to the way I want to do it.
You're not learning compromise, are you, mate?
Yeah, of course. I think as you get older, there's a slight part of you that mellows and a slight part of you. Look, and that you know, over my years, I've won a lot and I've achieved so much in my career. And, you know, it was nice last year to get a few nice accolades, people and organisations looking at that. But, you know, when you win something or when we've done something special, I never really think about that too much that day. I'm not the best at getting the accolade. I want to win at everything I do.
Yeah.
I want to be the best. But when you do it and you get it, it's like nothing I have is ever at home. That trophy table there is full of trophies of mine. I never take them home. Because it's done that day. Mm. I think more about when I have won something, I've done something good. And this is why I've mellowed, is the sacrifices I have had to make to get to where I were. And this is why I've mellowed with them a little bit, because they've got kids, they've got families. And, you know, some of my stuff, I've missed weddings, I've missed christenings, I missed some time with my kids. I was listening to a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and it's a fantastic book by Tim Grosvenor. I read his books all the time, but Relentless and Winning. And he said, you know, he was packing his bag again for another trip to go do counselling for Michael Jordan. He's a sports scientist. And his little girl went up to him and said, Daddy, you know, can you not go away again this weekend? You're always away. He said, I have to go away so I can put food on your table and buy you pretty dresses. She came back 3 minutes later and she said, if I eat less, would you not go away?
Yeah.
And it's about winning. And he said, reluctantly, I had to look away from her. And I sympathise with it, but it says, as I were doing that, I was still packing my bag to go away.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done over the years, is like, you miss it and your heart pulls, but you wanted to win. And now, as I've done so many nice achievement things, I've mellowed a little bit. So I give in a bit to them and pander to some of the needs and, you know, try and come to a compromise with them. But, you know, there's always the dark side. So if I get pushed into a corner, if somebody's pushing my buttons too much, then... But I've got some great guys.
Yeah. But you got rid... I mean, how do I put this sentence? Everyone I speak to, you've got bright people with you. You know, they're very kind of driven individuals as well as being quality. They're very switched on.
I think it's important. Again, it's down selection.
That's more and more now.
Yeah, when you're walking around today, you're seeing like James Parr, Stacey, Reese Whitehouse. Mm. They look immaculate. They're walking around like looking like $1 million.
Yeah,
it's the way we are. It's the way that you improve, you know. It's the way you make them into individuals. And I think the training that we give is the highest level.
Yeah,
it's the highest level. And I actually do believe in this: is that when you're not with us, it's down. Because nobody's as intense as what we are. So, like, I know the brand; they're not as intense as what we are. They don't give what we give.
Mm.
So there's no way. Unless you're such a driven individual. I think you mentioned somebody earlier there. Again, they're individually driven.
I think that's most people in the industry, your face is recognisable from smiling out at the front of a trade mag or standing on stage, possibly or maybe not always with E17 near you. The kind of, the front end, glam, fun bit of it all. And it's always high energy, great shows. That graph behind it, doesn't get thought of, presumably, by most of the people watching.
Because you do, you know, the guys, you and your teams all do make it look easy.
Yeah, but you've seen today, you saw with these guys when I think you came in, you know, we're doing presentation training and we do it really fun. You know, one of the things is about a 5-step method that we have on stage to talk about an air cut. But to learn how to do that, I'll go through a series of things with like, what's your favourite drink? What's your favourite food? What's your favourite destination? Who would you be ideal dinner date? And then we turn it into a story. So you're saying, yeah, I'm sat here with Anthony Laban. His favourite food is Chinese. He's sat in his favourite holiday destination in the Bahamas. He's having dinner with Elvis Presley. And so we turn it into a story. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then once they've done that, which is tough, they have to do that with them with a product and an air cut. That's training.
Yeah.
But I've made it fun for them. So they enjoyed doing it. But the end of it, they've getting the job
exercise
done.
And they're knowing it.
So yeah, it's graft, but it's got to be done.
Mm. So if I can you back to kind of more UK based and more barbershop based to make it a bit more relatable, how much development do you think actually comes from the work from the guys in the barbershops? How much of the wild progress and new product ranges and new product launches? You were just showing me your new Air.
Yeah.
Does that reflect through from the work that's being done, or does it go the other way? You guys have come up with an idea and you flog it to the industry.
I think we have lots of focus groups and we have different, different cultures as well. You know, so we do a lot with TABS, which is Turkish and Arabic barbers, focus groups that we work with as well on that, okay, to ask them what's the next product you'd like to see? What colours would you like to see? Mm. What weight would you like to see? So we do lots of focus groups that goes back into product development, which is always nice to do. I think we give out products that, like I've just said to you, you see the IVs and then you see the IVs there. And when you look at them, they think, oh, that one's blue, that one's chrome, till you pick them up.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I mean, it's a quarter of the weight, if not lighter. And it's amazing how light that is.
And then there's a bit of a story why we've done that, but the cutting performance is exactly the same.
Mm.
So there's a story. And then you get a different user.
Yeah.
Because you get a unisex hairdresser that might want to use it. You get a men's barber that wants to use it. Or you get barbers who just want, you know, sometimes if we launch a product, barbers just want it anyway.
Yeah.
New product.
Well, we love a new toy.
Of course.
Sorry to interrupt, but I want to talk to you about something really important. Our podcast here is more than just about the industry, the barbershop, and the life therein. It's about the community that we built. And in the time we've been doing this podcast, the community has been amazing and we've loved it. Now we're looking for you to get involved and become an essential part of our future. We're seeking long-term, mutually beneficial opportunities for partnership to come on board and help spread our message, to connect with our community, to help grow it, to keep the message strong, and to keep hearing and discussing these amazing topics that we do with all our guests. If you think your brand is the right brand for us, if you want to get in touch, please email me at thenoblebarberpodcast@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram. It'd be really good to talk to you. We'd love you to be part of our future. Okay, and now back to the episode.
Question that I do get asked, seeing you've nicked all my best questions for your education this afternoon. What responsibility do you think big brands have for barber education? Because you guys have sat very proudly front and center. Education has always been something that, while in my knowledge, has offered.
Mm.
Do you think that's vital for is that a responsibility that a brand has?
I think it's not a responsibility. I think it's something as a brand we should do for our own end users. You know, if we give you the correct information on how that product should be used, but what type of hair it's used for and what kind of style it's used for, it makes it so much easier for the selection. So it's more of a duty than responsibility. Well, is that both the same, really? It's responsibility, duty. But yeah, I think we'd always want to make sure within our marketing messages and education, we're giving the end user the best option of the information that they need to make the purchase.
But you see now, I mean, there's so many tools, so much equipment, so much out there. Do you think tools are getting more advanced than the barbers who haven't really mastered the basics?
Do you know what, guys? I've been thinking about this most of last week, actually. I've always been a big advocate that the last 10 years, barbering's grown so much and it's been the biggest growth in this hair and beauty industry, yep. I think, barbering. I just think the last year and a half, 2 years, it stood still a little bit. And I'm not seeing as much investment into education as what they used to be. I'm seeing them buy products, but they've stood still a bit. Shop refurbs, you know. At one point, there were loads opening up. There were everybody investing into stuff. But I think it just stood still a little bit. I think they need to get back to where we were a little bit. And, you know, decreasing in show numbers. You know, Barber Connect's gone now. You know, whether that's Barber's fault or whether the exhibition just decided to pull it all into one roof, you don't know, but it's gone. It was a show that we all look forward to at the NEC, Telford.
Yeah.
Anyway, to the NEC. But it's just an indicator that the last 2 years have just pitted off and just dropped a little bit.
Yeah.
We need to get that energy back.
I mean, we're seeing more, I think there doesn't seem to be such a disparity between hairdressing and barbers anymore.
No.
It does feel that there's a kind of, I think hairdressers are recognising and admiring barbers' work and vice versa.
Yeah.
And obviously we've got HairCon coming up now, which has taken, last year had a big barber influence. This year, obviously we're going to be there, so it'll have an even stronger one this year. Do you find that your education, are you meeting more hairdressers who are wanting to learn barber skills, or has that calmed down a bit?
No, bear in mind the academy upstairs, 80% of our courses are hairdressers. Barbers kind of like, you know, they kind of want to think that they know it all.
They know it already.
So I always have a saying, you can always tell a barber, you just can't tell them much. So we have lots of hairdressers that want to come and have education. And my message to barbers out there is, you know, we can tailor may any course that you want, whether that's coming to our academy or whether we go to them. But you never stop learning.
No.
I've learned every single day.
I'll move you on that.
I'm so lucky with these guys today because I'll learn tonight, I'll learn tomorrow when they're cutting. I just learn loads of stuff. It's just amazing. And I'm 56. And so if I can still do it, you know.
I think that, you know, like we said, you know, you've done 26 years in this role and you're in this with the company and your role's changed and changed and changed. And obviously there's the graph, but there's, you know, you can't do that without the passion.
It's passion. It's no fluke. I'll tell you what I find. I think you said it a bit earlier. You know, like this era is now of the Instagram barber and them all popular through social media and all of those things. I think it's been easier to climb up the ladder to the top in the last 3 or 4 years because of social media than it was in our day to get to the top. Mine were all graft. And we're saying one of our concerns is that they haven't had a proper apprenticeship. They haven't done a junior's job where you'd fold 100 towels, you'd neutralise 15 perms. I did it in an hairdressing salon. So I fear sometimes, I even fear for Dean Gleeson, head of education, and Stacey Wright, the art director for Wall, is that they've not done the graft that I've done. So I feel at some point, are they going to have a crash sometimes? So I feel my training's gone a lot longer into than what they did. But the real craft, so I think it's easy now to get to the top.
Yeah.
Quicker.
Yeah.
The real test for any of them is staying there. So to stay where I've stayed for 26 years, that will never be repeated. Well, I don't know if you know, but we give caps out at Salon International. So it's the international show. So everybody gets a cap and it's a black velvet cap and it'll have the gold wall on the front. At the side, it has their initials. And on the other side, it has a number of how many salons they've done. So mine last year were 28 salons. That was my 28th salon for Wall. Wow. The nearest to me is Michael Damiano on 14.
Yeah.
So when I looked at that and think, I've got another maybe 4 or 5 years left to do maybe 30, 31 shows I'll get to. There's no way Michael at 38, 39 is probably going to do that many shows. He's got two kids. So that might never, ever be done ever again. Mm. Ever. Mm. You know, and so you look, then those are kind of things that I look at.
I was going to say, those are huge accolades.
Those are big achievements. So I think it's a bit easy to get to the top, but I think the hardest thing and the trick is staying there as well.
Yeah. You and Peter Shilton. Most caps.
Schultz, yeah.
There we go.
Just better looking than him.
I mean, do you think the industry's got its head round the fact now that hype can't beat mastery? That we're now, as Instagram is, it does seem to want that talent now. It does. The people who are doing really well with their education online are really good. Are producing really good quality, have a system, have something special going on, and a lot of the jokers are starting to disappear. Do you think we're understanding that there is a mastery that I think hairdressing apprenticeships always gave us through Sassoons or Tony and Guy or whoever you came from. We understand mastering that skill. Are we getting that into this industry now?
I think so, but I would have to always have the fear factor that there's still a few charlatans about, unfortunately. Yeah. And, you know, they know who they are. And they know that I know who they are. And
if they don't, I'm sure you're going to tell them at some point. But
I think, exactly. Well, they know, because I think anybody who's unsure if you're a charlatan or not, you know, because I just don't bother with you.
Mm.
Because, as I say, for me, it's false. And it's like eager. I'm a Yorkshire lad. And dudes shouldn't act like they do. Mm. Men shouldn't act like they do to get to where they want to get. It's just wrong. Mm. And they'll get found out. Yeah. I always think that, you know, my mum used to say, it'll all come out in wash. And it will.
Yeah,
eventually they get found out. Because
we are seeing some companies that are really flying. And so, I mean, I'm only asking you these questions because you meet more barbers probably than I do, and we don't do badly. But is there a difference between the barbers who really do scale it and the barbering companies that do seem to go somewhere and have that integrity and that growth? For those that don't, is there a special ingredients?
A plan. A plan. So I think a lot of the barbering stuff that's happened, a lot of pucks as well, a lot of products out there. But the best ones are the ones that's had a plan, got a structure, business plan, marketing plan, somebody who's ahead of it. You know, look, we look at Richie at Captain. If you've been down to his emporium down there in King's Lynn, I mean, it's an amazing setup. You know, there's a guy there who's had a plan, a vision. He's developed things well and probably done them better than what they could ever be. And he's bastardised those products far too much, you know. And then there's other companies that come up with an idea in the bedroom to do a product. And, you know, fair play to them. At least you've had a go and tried it. There's no plan. I always say to barbers as well, you know, they'll open up, they might get a loan for 25, 30 grand and they'll spend 25, 30 grand on furniture. And they open up and they've got no marketing plan. I always say to anybody, you know, if you've got 25 grand, you know, keep 10 grand back for advertisement, marketing, social media campaigns, leaflet. You know what's really coming back in? Social media, for me, has been a thing that's just like overtaken. But some of our age groups, we're not, I'm not anyway. I'm still old fashioned. I still buy things going into shops.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll order food or I will order a gardener or do have something done at home by a leaflet drop.
Mm.
And I think sometimes if you want to have a spike of new clients, you want to do something, go to your printer, spend 60, 70 quid on 500 leaflets, really nicely designed, print out and get them out to football teams, school kids. Leaflet drops are fantastic. Yeah. They're still, because they're such a rare thing now, because everything's done online. And so I think we've got to go back to some of that.
I mean, it's interesting when we talk about the skills, whether it's skills as a businessman or skills, you know, behind the chair. If you were talking to, well, when you're talking to young barbers, what are the skills you think they need to develop sooner rather than later?
Social skills. That's a big one. You all know as well, if you've employed anybody, you've got somebody who can really talk to clients. It's such a refreshing change that they can open a door for somebody. They see opportunities. They see a bag on the floor. They'll see something drop. They see air that needs sweeping up. They'll see somebody who needs a drink. So social skills are really important. And if you've got that, you can work with everything else.
Yeah.
If I struggle with somebody who just like stares at people and she's seen somebody struggle with some bags at the door and they don't open the door for them. So one of the biggest things I always think is having some really good social skills and manners. I think that really helps and it makes me excited because I'm thinking, you're right, you've got some manners, you've got some good social skills, let me help you.
Yeah.
Something about them.
Yeah.
I like a bit of drive. I think that's
it. It is. Luke and I have this conversation a lot and there are the guys that, and a lot of them have been on the pod, they've just got something about them and
it's
hard to put it down, but they, put a finger on it, but they definitely have that focus. They've got a direction they're going in.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think more recently, most of our conversations have been about the business of barbering and about barber shops themselves. Do you think it was just the vast amount opening up that's led to the problems and the vast amount now that are starting to close? Or do you think there's more to it than that?
No, I think we saturated the market. And what happened was, as guys were doing really well in a barbershop and they built a clientele up at 21 and 22, they were finding funds from somewhere, they're opening up, but they never had a plan and they never moved on. So all they did were take their clients, or 60, 70% of those clients from that original barbershop, and start with that one, and then maybe get to a point where they get one more barber, and then he or she does the same to that barbershop, and it just filtered through till it watered right. It just watered down.
Yeah.
There were no real plan. I think the biggest one that I've seen happen is when maybe two or three staff leave at the same time to go and open up. That's a bomb. That's a bomb hitting it. And those, but you know, I just think we saturated the market. Like coffee shops, innit? Sometimes you walk into coffee shops and
but there still are those ones that pop up, even with coffee shops. You know, Luke's a bit of he's our connoisseur of his coffee. But you know, he finds this new brand that comes up and they just seem to get so much right.
Yeah.
Do you think there's still room for barbers out there, for companies that can just stop, think about it, plan it, and still succeed?
Absolutely. If you come up with a plan and a concept, you research. Again, I think it's location sometimes. You know, they'll go and open a shop where you think, where you open the shop? I look at it sometimes and like, would I go in city centres? Probably not. I'd look at like an housing estate where they're near a school and, you know, communities where you know that there's going to be 500, 600 houses.
Yeah.
And we were talking just earlier then about the leaflet dropping and stuff of our ages that, you know, when you get to our age, you're probably earning a lot more money than what you were in 20s. So we're still a market for them barbers to go and spend disposable income. You know, the physio I'm going for at a minute, you know, and every time you go, it's a couple hundred quid oxygen chamber and have this probe done. But that's once every 10 days. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't think younger people have got that. So when barbers offer a massage or a service or a hot towel shave or they've got some best products or... People of our generation will go and spend that money. But how are you marketing for us?
Yeah.
How are you getting us? And so I think it needs revamping and people need to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why I've always come back to this idea of, you know, before you get a shop, before you even consider it, you got to know who your customer is going to be.
Mm.
And the people that I've met who are most successful could almost kind of draw them. You know, you could be very clear about who they're wanting to get, and their environment, their space, their marketing, their brand, all appeals to that group.
Tell you what, you know, if we picked 10 barbers and we sat them down and we did a quiz with them and said, right, I'm going to ask you some questions. Is how much is your rent? What's it cost you every month to stand still? What's your prices? How many clients a week do you need to do to stand still? I'll tell you now. We would struggle to get 2 out of 10 that would not, because you're carefree and you do probably well. And so you've got cash in your pockets and you've done really well. Mm. So I'm not saying anybody's thicky in that. I'm not saying it's not that. But I'd love to help people, give them a plan to say, hey, listen, if you got a plan, you could see how much money you're making. Yeah. Instead of guesstimating it, as I call. Mm. I have a real plan to say, hey, guys, we need to get 47 clients through this door every week at paying 20 quid. That's going to break us even. And then you can see we'd like to go on holiday 6 times this year. So we need to get 100 clients a week through the salon to make sure I can go on my holidays and just forecast it that way. Have a plan about it.
Yeah.
That's how I do it.
And I think that's when I talk to people about price increase and stuff like that. It's like, you know, oh, I don't know if they're paying more. It's like, well, just do the sum. There's a sum in there that, you know, if you need to make an extra £500 a month or £1,000 a month, whatever it is, work out what £1, £2, £5 is going to cost to put on your bill and do the sum. But when we sat down at barbershop, at Haircon, talking to barbers, the amount of them, exactly that, when you broke down how much they were taking compared to how many hours they worked, There were quite a lot that were earning less than a fiver an hour.
It's, you know, it's,
and you just kind of go, you're not taking this like a job. You're just thinking it's going to be great rather than planning to make it great.
I think the fear factor is, William, there's that many shops opened up in and around them that whilst they're in and around them, they are scared of putting the prices up by a quid or 2 quid. But it's not that you're just putting your price up. That person's paying for your 20 years experience.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to go to a physio that's just qualified for 3 years, yes, they'll be fresh. They'll have all the knowledge. They'll be able to do this. But if I'm going to a barber who's got 20 years experience, he's probably going to understand my beard growth a bit better. He's probably going to know that if I say I want, you know, a nice faded beard out, he's going to know that a little bit, you know, different. So you're paying for experience and the service.
whether it's a dentist, you go to an osteopath, you go to any of these places, they put their prices up because that's what they need to earn.
Mm.
I do think it's an interesting time now with the way things change. There's so many products, so many things. We've had barbershops open around us. But the constant does seem to still be that while stay at the top of their game.
Yeah, well, you work hard, you know.
And it is the graft, isn't it? I mean, when you come down to everyone I meet that's connected with WOW, whether it's Joth or Dean or any of the boys, there's the graft factor with it, isn't there?
Well, of course. And, you know, you don't want to lose that graft factor. But also as well, I think from our point of view is that, you know, I just teach people that nothing comes easy. You need to be buying lottery tickets every week if you want something easy. That's your chance. Everything else will only come to you if you, you know, if you dream about being a millionaire, it'll never happen. You've got to make it to be a millionaire. So I've never been able to do it unless I've grafted. Notes come to me.
But you do manage to seem to kind of spread this mindset that you've got to have some attitude, you've got to have some graft, and you've got to have some kind of motive for doing it. Because all the people that seem to be associated with WOW are very directed.
Yeah, I think it's down to leadership.
And it's down to
leadership.
The top, isn't it?
I never get bored of leading them well. You can see when you've seen little bits today. I make them laugh. We have fun with them, but I'm very direct. And I always want to, I'll never change from that. I always want my team to be the best. And so for that, I have standards. And you have to hit those standards on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We have a saying here. It's today you're going to get up on purpose. You're going to come to work on purpose. Whatever job you're going to do, you're doing on purpose. Whatever meeting you're going to do, you're on purpose. If you're going to do training, you're going to do a seminar, you're going to do a show, you can do it on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't want to mess around.
No, I like that.
Get on with it and do it like I meant to do it.
Yeah.
And that's for us, that's the only way to do it. And I've been very lucky with the people I've worked for, the family, my MD, who's just retired. But I've been super lucky to have great leadership and guidance myself. Nobody looks at that.
Yeah.
Who leads me? Who's my boss?
Yeah.
And if you met my boss and I said to you, he terrified me, you think, hey, no way. Because he's quiet, he's withdrawn, but such an amazing brain. And you know, he could just look at me and I'd be like, oh my God.
Oh no, I think it's fine. I mean, I think, you know, even myself, I still have, yeah, certainly people that I go to, I think without a mentor, it's very easy to lose kind of, yeah, lose that stability in yourself.
Yeah. Like I said to you earlier, you know, one of the biggest things is when we've had an amazing selling international and we've done fantastically well and we've sold out products and everything, we had all the accolades, you know, that's my worst. That's when I feel worse, because I drive home in the car thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get better than that next year?
Yeah, let's up it.
Not like I'm going out for a meal, I'm going to buy myself a nice walk, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. None of it. It's like I shit myself driving home thinking, me and my big gob, me and my hard work, what are we going to do next year? And then obviously, you're going to keep managing it, mate. Well, you know, got great people around me.
I was going to say, we've got a nice gathering mooching around out there watching us. Watch this in action. Mate, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries, man. Nice to see you again. Nice to see you.
And I quite like that. If you're going to do it on purpose. That's a very good phrase. Guys, I hope you enjoyed that. He's been Simon Shaw. I've been Anthony Levan, and we've been the Noble Barber Podcast. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch. And come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.